It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. Lots to talk about as we prepare ourselves for Microsoft's year-end results. There's some big scoops ahead. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley working overtime. The details on Windows 10X might surprise you. And Slack goes after Teams in the EU. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 682, recorded Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. You're a crybaby. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Microsoft with our Microsoft watchers. That's Mary Jo Foley on the right. She's from allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Good day, Mary Jo.
Good day, Leo.
Gentlewoman. I've turned into a Puritan. I think because we were talking about package stores, right. I think. On your left, the gentleman, Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com. And, of course,
hello, Leo.
Points North. Hello, Mr. Lower McCungee. How are you guys? Yeah. How's everything going in your next of the woods?
It's a busy day and a busy week.
Is it? Tomorrow, yeah. Paul's getting up early. No, it's not early for you. Yeah. It's noon your time.
Yeah.
You want to join us, Mary Jo? There's a seat for you.
No. That's true. No way, man. No way.
The world wants to know.
Yeah.
If Halo Infinite, best Halo ever, best game ever.
Very exciting. Very exciting. We thought, who better to join me on the Xbox Series X launch than Mr. Thurrott? So 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern tomorrow. We're going to get to see the reveal. Is it? It's not live, probably.
Right. I mean, they're broadcasting it at a certain time.
That's all we know.
Yeah.
It could be artfully constructed ahead of time for all we know. Yeah.
Actually, that's what they did with Build, and it was kind of interesting. Some live, some recorded. And it was
Inspire this week. Same thing. The partner show.
Oh, that's right. Apple was
like that, except it was completely pre-recorded. It's fine.
I
didn't mind Apple. You know, in a way, it was better because it was, you know, they had more more packed information.
Yeah.
It was well done, too. It was a nice presentation.
Tomorrow, Mary Jo, you could come and be the anti-Xbox editor. You could say, that's stupid.
But that would be every comment of mine, so it wouldn't be that fun.
Well, honestly, I might be saying that with a couple of these games, so I guess we'll see.
That's so dumb. Why don't you go outside and get some fresh air, okay?
Exactly.
Right.
Let's talk about the EU.
Right. Speaking of dumb, here's our segue. Oh,
yes.
Mary Jo was not excited about this story.
No, I'm here for it.
Okay.
I think it's a ridiculous thing that Slack is doing. Slack has announced it's filing a complaint against Microsoft and the EU because they don't like that Microsoft is, quote, tying Teams to Office 365. And they feel like that's blocking them from being chosen as a best of breeds technology versus Teams.
Stuart Butterfield of Slack has turned into the Scott McNeely of this century.
Oh my God. Scott McNeely.
Well, except Scott McNeely was intelligent. Scott McNeely had some pretty good ideas about antitrust. I found myself agreeing with him on a lot of stuff. This guy comes off as a whiner.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, please buy us. They're not competition. They're not competition. Right. They're not competition.
We're filing an antitrust complaint.
And then he's like, oh my God, they're obsessed with us. And it's like, right. They never even mention you. What are you talking about? You talk about Microsoft all the time.
Every day. I know. So in May, Stuart Butterfield, the CEO of Slack, said Microsoft's not even a competitor to Slack. But then if you look at their 10Q for Slack, they cite Microsoft as their main competitor, not just a competitor, right? So now they weren't a competitor, maybe they're a competitor, but now they're such a competitor, they have to go to the EU and try to get legal intervention against Microsoft. So I'm not saying this as somebody who loves Teams. In fact, I'm not a big Teams fan. Slack is okay, Teams is okay, but I just don't like, I don't like the hypocrisy here.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I've always been bothered by his stance in particular, and I guess we'll just say Slack's stance in general. Yeah. I found it to be disingenuous all along. Yeah. That said, I mean, we live in an era now where big tech is being examined by antitrust regulators around the world. And I have myself, for example, complained a lot about Apple's business policies with regards to the App Store. It's not hard to complain about a company like Google or Facebook, Amazon is also in the mix. I mean, maybe with both the past in mind and what's happening to these other companies now, I thought it might be interesting just to kind of briefly discuss how this kind of lines up. Because when you think, like, the App Store to me is the best example of this kind of thing, because the App Store is a gateway to iOS that developers have to go through. They have no choice. There are fees that some say are onerous. I happen to agree that they are. We talked about that 30% thing versus like 3% for credit cards. But the central issue really is that they control some huge percentage of mobile by revenue, right? And they are the gatekeepers to this system. Microsoft and other companies can't speak directly to their own customers on the platform. It's a huge problem. And so I guess when I look at the Slack thing, I think, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Office 365 or Microsoft 365 is fairly dominant. Microsoft doesn't have like a monopoly by any measure in the enterprise, but Microsoft is obviously well-placed in the enterprise.
Yeah,
they are doing the product tying thing. I mean, they're not selling Teams as a standalone product. They are bundling it into absolutely fair to say. Yeah. And you can think back, well, that's what they did with IE and Windows, right? Except that like Microsoft 365 isn't dominant in any way like Windows was. I mean, I think that's the problem. The other thing is the App Store comparison. Sorry, just real quick. I just want to say it's not the only way to reach those customers. Microsoft doesn't get 30% even if you try to bypass them. They don't get 30% if you go through them. They don't get any percent. There's no, it's not the same thing.
Yeah. The other part of this argument that I think Microsoft probably will make when they, if they have to defend themselves in court, if the EU takes this up and decides to go forward. So Microsoft has 260 million paid seats of Office 365. They have 75 million active daily users of Teams. So those two numbers aren't exactly apples to apples, but if you kind of look at them that way, it means one third of Office 365 users are using Teams and the other two thirds are not, even though it's free to them.
The other thing to look at is how many Microsoft 365 customers are using Slack.
A lot. Even Slack brings that up,
probably,
right?
It's probably pretty high.
Slack talks about that publicly, and they've actually put out press releases, I believe, about this saying, you know what, even though Microsoft gives away Teams, there's a lot of people who use Office 365 who use Slack. Okay, so you just made your point that people still are willing to pay.
This is
Slack.
Where the phrase hoisted by your own petard comes into play, because I think Slack's public statements are ultimately going to be what comes back to haunt it. In 18 years when the EU finally takes some action on this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen slowly if it happens.
Yeah. So I don't have a problem with Slack. And you know what? They've decided, I guess, they can't compete without going the legal route. They've given up because 75 million active daily Teams users. The latest Slack number is 12.5 million simultaneously connected users. So obviously Microsoft has really bypassed them by a lot.
So that is an interesting point, because the other issue here is Slack a month ago had their financial results from the previous quarter. And one thing we learned is that they didn't grow exponentially like a lot of these other companies with messaging services. And investors were really disappointed by that. Yeah. And that coupled with the news that, oh, I guess we can't compete, we're going to have to file an antitrust complaint, might signal to potential customers, to potential investors, that this company is not going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they may have kind of sealed the deal here themselves. I don't know what their original aim was. I don't know if they wanted Microsoft to buy them when that was a possibility. Remember, there were rumors to that effect.
Yeah, I think they did. Microsoft 2016. They, yep.
So, yep. Like $6 billion or something.
$8 billion.
$8 billion. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, that's one. That's over one Nokia. So, you know, I think Microsoft at that time was probably kind of burned by that. And I know they were swayed. I think Bill Gates and others had said, "Look, we could do this ourselves. Why are we spending money on this?"
Right.
The other issue, and no offense to Slack. I mean, Slack is what it is. It's fine. You know, and they, I will give them credit for being an innovator in the space and the kind of chat-based collaboration field or whatever. Microsoft took about a year, I would say, since the first release of Teams to kind of get up to where Teams was. But in the couple of years since that, Teams has become an enormous platform. It's become the next Outlook.
Even more. It's become the next Windows, right?
Yeah.
It's right. Like a, especially it's with everything, right?
Yeah. It's literally a platform that runs apps.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons I you don't like it, which is one of the reasons I'm starting to have problems with it, is if anything, it's getting too big for its own good. It's
exactly
so much stuff going on. It's kind of hard to keep track of it. So Teams, you know, I hate to say that Slack is right in this respect, but I mean, this is not what they meant. But in many ways, Slack and Teams don't compete anymore because Teams does so much more than Slack does.
Yeah. Did you see Microsoft's response, by the way, to the complaint?
What did they say?
Here's a choice line from it. With COVID-19, the market has embraced Teams in record numbers, while Slack has suffered from its absence of video conferencing. So it's like,
I think that's related to what I said before. That was reflected in their financials. Right?
It was.
I think, Zoom and Google and Microsoft, I mean, everyone who has any play in this field at all, we know what happened to Teams. I mean, Teams has been almost exponential.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, we're all working from home.
So why doesn't Slack buy Zoom? Probably it's too expensive.
Wait a minute. I'm confused. Slack has video conferencing.
Yeah, but
we use it all the time.
So you can look this up. They actually came out sometime in the past month and said that video conferencing was not a priority for them. It was a kind of a sub use, and they were not going to invest in it and didn't really care that much about it. And that, too, might be viewed as a statement of just – like Microsoft is not a competitor. It's like, we're not particularly strong in this area. We don't see any way to make it better quickly. We're going to pretend it's not important. But Slack comes off very poorly between all of the public statements, especially from their CEO. The financials, like I said, from last month, and now this, it's like, well, we can't compete. And it's like, okay, you guys are all over the map.
I know.
I understand the frustration because it is fair to say, I mean, Microsoft saw what they were doing, kind of balanced the two ways of going about it and said, well, we're going to build the same thing. Yeah. You know, of course, Microsoft being Microsoft, they piled it on and it's a much bigger thing now, but you know, they did go right after Slack. By the way, that's what companies do. They compete. It's not illegal to aggressively compete with a company.
I remember one of Stuart Butterfield's claims was Microsoft is obsessed with us. Yeah, you know how Microsoft works? They zero in on something that's successful and growing, and they obliterate you. That's the way they work. Even with Satya Nadella at the helm, this is how this works.
Yeah.
This is business, right? I don't know. I'm not saying I think it's like amazing or a great strategy, but it's worked for Microsoft.
They're like the yippie dog that's running around your legs and yipping and yipping and yipping, and eventually they're just going to punt you through the uprights. I mean, it's we've had enough.
I know.
I don't hear Microsoft talking about Slack. Like, I just don't.
They're famous for not talking about their competitors, right? They don't really talk about AWS. They don't talk about Google Cloud, right? No,
that's true. Yeah, that's true. I used to complain about that with Apple. They used to talk around Apple when they had all these consumer aides. And it was like, guys, just say what you're trying to do here. It's obvious, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, according to Stuart Butterfield here, Microsoft is obsessed with this company. Right. It's like, I think you're the one who's obsessed. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. anyway, we'll see if the EU takes up this complaint or does not. So we should mention people go to the EU because they tend to have more luck getting their cases heard on antitrust there. And also because in the EU, what they look at is there fair competition? They don't look at are consumers harmed like cases in the US, right?
Yeah, so that's right. That's right.
That's kind of a better.
I would say there's a higher. There's a pretty good chance the EU will decide to investigate Microsoft. You have to understand like the steps involved. That doesn't mean they find Microsoft guilty. I mean, that means a year will go by, and then they will eventually release their findings of. Well, no, they don't call it findings. If that's the United States, they'll release their conclusions of whatever the hell. It doesn't matter. But they'll eventually come down and say we are going to charge Microsoft or not. They have a very rich history of doing this against American tech companies for sure.
Yep.
I can't think of any major example for the past several years where they've walked away from one of these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
No, but, and then what usually happens, right, is the EU comes to you like they have to Google and they say, we're going to charge you or we're going to fine you or whatever. And then the company comes back, okay, we'll do this. And they try to come to some agreement, right? So well, I don't know what I mean, Slack, you know what Slack wants? They want them to unbundle Teams from Office 365. That's their goal.
Okay, right? So here's the cynical Microsoft response to that. Okay, it's free now. You know, like, I mean, first of all, unfortunately for Slack, we're not talking about a music service here. We're not talking about a web browser. We're talking about something that people need now because there's a pandemic. And no offense to Slack, but like this is the wrong time to complain about a product that people need because they are working from home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you know, I hear you. I get it. I understand the frustration. You had to kind of know when you started this business that Microsoft would get involved in some way, you know?
Yeah.
You had to sort of anticipate that, right? I mean, I guess the hope there was just that they would be so slow moving, you know, and you could look at Microsoft cynically and say, oh, they probably had some stupid chat window to Outlook or something, and that would have gone poorly, you know, no doubt about it. But they didn't do that, you know, sorry. I mean, I don't know.
We'll see. I'm curious if the EU takes it up, and I'm curious what Microsoft will give them to try to quiet it down if it goes forward.
I could see the EU. My guess is that the EU will decide to investigate Microsoft. I think they will. I'm not saying I agree with it.
No, just like you said, they do like to do it. Yeah, they like to go after America.
Well, and your point is a good one. You know, the difference between antitrust law in the EU and here is consumers versus competition. Right. And they could look at this and say, you know, is Microsoft leveraging its market power in office productivity software? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could look at, let's look at that. I mean, that makes sense.
Yep.
I mean, the EU is notorious for going along with this kind of crap. So
they are. Yep.
Notice they're not doing it in the U.S. of A.
Nope.
not against Microsoft. But I mean, the one thing that's interesting about what's happening now is that there are multiple regulatory bodies in the U.S. looking at Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google.
Oh, because of the stores.
None of them are looking at Microsoft.
Right.
I mean, look, the one thing I think we'd all agree is one of the weirdisms of recent years, despite the fact that Microsoft is second only to Apple in market cap and sometimes surpasses Apple in market cap, it's kind of forgotten in all this discussion about big tech. Whereas, you know, companies like Google and Amazon and Facebook that are smaller than Microsoft, because they're consumer focused and people interact with their products or services as individuals, are kind of more high profile. And I think this kind of brings Microsoft back into the spotlight. Let's not forget about these guys. I mean, you know, I don't happen to think that they broke any laws here, but you know, whatever, who cares what I think, but I mean, I mean, this speaks to, it's a legitimate concern. I mean, Microsoft is a gigantic corporation. I think it's ethically a much better company than it was, say, 20 years ago or whatever during the antitrust stuff that they had here and in the EU. It's a completely different company. But, but it could still squash competitors. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure.
for all the kumbaya baloney we've been dealing with.
Right. You know? But then you could also make the case, okay, it, like Slack's whole thing is best of breed companies can't survive once Microsoft comes into the market. Okay, what about Zoom?
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Right. I mean, God, if anything, the last 10, 15 years are littered with Microsoft defeats in all kinds of markets. I mentioned music services. That's one.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of that stuff. Voice assistants, complete failure. You know, so, yeah, I mean, Microsoft's arrival doesn't mean anything necessarily. The enterprise is different from consumer, for sure. And they definitely have a bigger hold over that part of the market than they do over the consumer part. Anyway, interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be sad to see Slack disappear, but, you know, self-inflicted and whatnot.
If I were Google, I'd buy Slack.
That company. That's all I'm saying.
Google should buy Slack. Why didn't Google buy Slack? Google should
buy Slack. Yeah, that's a good point.
Integrate it with Meet or whatever the latest thing is that they do that's like Skype and
Google
Teams.
Tofu.
I can't keep up what it is anymore. Is it Meet? I think it's Meet.
Meet. It's Meet.
Yeah.
It's meat.
It's meat.
It's meat.
What's for dinner?
So Slack's complaint is that Microsoft's giving it away, right? I mean, that's...
Right.
Yeah.
Tying. Yeah.
Yeah. Tying.
Product
tying.
Yeah. I mean, obviously customers are paying for Microsoft 365. And I guess what they're saying is they didn't suddenly raise the price of Microsoft 365. But of course, they've added a ton of things to Microsoft 365 over the years. This just happens to be the biggest one.
Yep.
Look, if Teams hadn't taken off the way it had, and I'm talking pre-COVID, they probably would have stopped putting so many resources into it, and it would have just become one of a million things that were a part of Microsoft 365. We wouldn't be having this conversation, but. The reality is, I mean, I complain a lot about Microsoft stuff. You may not have noticed. I'm kind of subtle about it. But but Teams is a stunning example of them getting it right because they didn't just go after Slack. They saw some broader opportunity. They did turn it into a platform. And we could kind of quibble over that or whatever. But, I mean, this is – look, this is all this. We're talking like Windows, Office, Outlook, part of Office, obviously, Teams. I mean – those are kind of historically the, and I guess server, what Azure, but I mean, you know, there's a finite number of like hugely successful platforms at Microsoft and Teams has become one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. It's something rare.
I feel like Teams is the new SharePoint because SharePoint, okay. SharePoint at one point was supposed to be the be-all, end-all platform. I mean, I used to call it the Swiss Army knife of products because it did everything. There were like six discrete things that it did. And if you're like, does this do that? Yeah, SharePoint does it, right? But now I feel like they're taking all the concepts from SharePoint and they're advancing them and making them part of Teams. And that's why
it's even better for Teams. It's kind of it's Outlook as well, right? And it, in many ways... Yeah. Teams becomes the face of Microsoft 365, you know,
and for an
end user, you know, the Microsoft story back in the day, you know, 90s, 2000s, whatever was, you know, you woke up as a knowledge worker, you opened up Outlook and you spent your day there. It showed you what you were going to do, what the schedule was, your emails would come in. And I feel like Teams is becoming that for people. Mm-hmm. It's where work is.
Where you live.
It's where work occurs.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Slack actually can't compete very well with that.
It's not
as full featured as all that, I don't think.
It's a work hub. That's what it's become. Like it started out as a group collaboration platform. And now, if I'm describing Teams, I say it's your hub for work. Yeah. It's not just a collab platform now.
Yeah. I mean, we just did this at work. We had a PowerPoint thing going around and, they put it into Teams. You double click on it. It opens up, passes through your authentication. You edit it. Your edits are in there. You just close the thing, and the next person will. You know, it's SharePoint is occurring in the background there. By the way, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Right.
But you don't see that. You don't have to think about it. You don't care. And if I didn't have the client, it would have opened in the web. You know, like it just kind of happens. Like it's just. And of course, there. You know, we have chat. We chat a lot. We do video call. We have a weekly meeting. It's. It's the hub. Yeah. I don't know. There's another way to say it. I'm sorry. I'm just babbling. But I mean, it's, yeah, it literally is what you said. It's the hub for, you know, how people work. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry, Slack.
Sorry. You lose. Next. Next. Next case.
You've been Netscaped.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Paul throws the gauntlet down. There we go.
Well, there, by the way, I mean, there is the, one of the big similarities there is a little bit of hubris, right? The small guy is a lot of talking.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by the little dog thing, you know, yip, yip, yip. Eventually Microsoft turns around and kicks it, you know? It's like, well, thanks. You know, what they say, it was like they woke up the bear, right? That was kind of the saying at the, for Netscape, wasn't it? You've awoken the bear. No, you don't poke a sleeping bear. What are you doing? Like, if you want to beat it, release a better product and shut the hell up. Don't brag in its face about it. You know? Anyway, it's interesting to me that Microsoft still has this capability. I think of them as a kinder, gentler company today. And it's nice to see them, you know.
Yeah, one last time for old times.
Right? Yeah. It's like Michael Jordan scoring like 40 points as a wizard.
You know?
You know, it's nice.
Just to show you could still do it. You can still engulf and devour. I thought it was interesting. Was it Brad Smith who was testifying about Apple's store?
So
is this kind of the same thing going the other way? I mean, it's throwing a little shade. So you said something interesting that I didn't know. Microsoft charges no commission for apps in the App Store on Windows. Is that right?
That's not right.
Oh, it's not right.
No, in fact, anything. I think their commission is exactly the same as Apple's.
Oh.
Right. So is that ironic or hypocritical? The issue there is that the percentage of people who buy apps in the store or get apps to the store as opposed to getting them on the web or somewhere else is minuscule, right? So when you compare it to what Apple's doing in iOS, there is no other way to get the app. You have to go through them. So as an app developer, you have to pay them that fee. You can't even communicate in the app that there's another way to pay for this thing, or you can, you know, it's the rules are crazy.
Yeah.
Microsoft doesn't do any of that. Microsoft's issue is the same issue that any customer or any developer would have. It's the issue that Spotify has, essentially. It's anyone who sells anything and has customers that use iOS, right? 50% of their customers, they're paying customers for sure. And this is why they're talking to Congress. There's going to be a congressional antitrust hearing next week. And I know that the CEOs, I shouldn't say this out of the top of my head, but I believe the CEOs of, no, I do know this. Amazon, Apple, and Google are going to be there. And others. I don't know if Microsoft's going to be there.
I don't think they are.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So Brad Smith, who was their president of Microsoft and his chief legal officer, spoke to Congress this past week about this coming hearing, about their issues that they have with the store. And it is that ability. Apple has set themselves up as a gatekeeper between them and Microsoft's customers. And they don't allow them to communicate however they want to those customers. They can't tell them, please do not pay through the Apple store because you're causing us like a 30% fee. You know, you can come back to our store. There's no second payment system that they can use. That's not Apple's. There's all kinds of problems. Yeah, we all know the problem. So, yeah, a lot of people look at this and they think, oh, this is they finally got what they deserved, you know, after all the things they did in the 90s, you know. It's not the same company. Seriously. All the people responsible for all the things that made Microsoft terrible in the 90s are gone. They're all gone. All of them.
Are they all gone? No, not all, but many are gone.
Gone positions of decision-making and power. If you look at the senior leadership team.
That's totally different group. Yeah.
My God, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Yep. Different company. So, but again, you know, Microsoft is, you know, would Microsoft prefer a world in which Windows was dominant in some capacity on mobile? Yeah, probably. But I mean, accepting the reality of the world, they know that their customers are on Android and they're on iOS and they have to deal with that. And they release apps and they're actually probably one of the bigger app makers on both those platforms. It's a big deal for them. Mm-hmm. And they have serious restrictions on iOS and they don't have any restrictions on Android. You know, and the contrast is sharp. And this may not be a great example, but I always bring this one up. Consider what the Europhone app looks like if you're an Android user, where you get this unbelievable wellspring of functionality And then what it's like if you're an iPhone user, you get nothing. You can look at your photos, I think is all you get or something. There's basically nothing there. And that is literally because of the locked platform that Apple created. Now, I know people will point out, well, Dell has a thing that does this. And yeah, I know. People have figured out ways around it. I mean, Microsoft, as a platform maker in its own right, obviously wants to work with Apple and do the right thing and do it the right way. They're not, you know, it's kind of like back in the day, back in the early 2000s or maybe late 1990s, Microsoft had reverse engineered PDF. And they could have put it into Office, but Adobe was a partner. You know, you don't do that. Like you just want the support to be there. It took 10 years, you know, whatever, but it eventually happened. So Apple has already, we've already seen a bunch of things this year. They're changing their behavior. There's no doubt that because of this and what's happening in the EU that they will change their behavior. Some of it will come voluntarily. And if it doesn't all come voluntarily, I think you're going to find that the Justice Department, Congress, the European Commission, whatever, someone somewhere is eventually going to say you need to change.
Hmm. Don't you feel it's like Microsoft, though, in the early antitrust years, it's too late, right? They've like used this tactic to completely dominate, right?
See, no, because the reason it's different is Microsoft dominated personal computing. Like they were literally personal computing at that time. So yeah, by the time you came around, like it's okay. Like Netscape was during the trial was sold to America Online. Remember? They had 41 like that. But the thing that happens, so you got to remember, iOS is only 14 or 15% of mobile by volume, right?
Yeah, sure.
They haven't already done, you know, they didn't become Google. Sure. They're them, you know. So
what
this does is it makes the playing field on iOS as fair as it is on Amazon. On Android. So if you're like a Spotify, you're not getting charged an additional 30% over what Apple would have to pay to be on their own service. Microsoft doesn't have to pay over $50, you know, every year for Office 365.
I just always think of Apple being the dominant player just because they dominate the tech press, right? And it's hard. You have to step back out of the reality distortion field and remember, no, people use Android. Everyone's using Android, not iOS, right?
So. Right. I mean, 85% of the world is using Android, for sure.
Right.
The problem is when you look at like App Store revenues, Apple's still bigger. When you look at profits, Apple is probably over 100%. I'm sure there are all kinds of hardware makers that are losing money, you know?
Yeah.
So you just want to level the playing field. That's all. I mean, I think one of the reasons Apple is fighting this the way they are is because they understand that, you know, when you only have 15% market share or whatever it is, and you don't have all those revenues coming in, it's a completely different story, you know, then you become a distant number two.
Okay.
But you know what? That's not the big news.
What's the big news?
We have two really big stories, and both of these, I believe, were broken by Mary Jo.
Well, before you get to those really big stories, let's stop just for a moment to contemplate what life would be like if your internet service provider could see everything you're doing online. Just close your eyes for a moment and try to remember what you've done in the last couple of days online. And what would it mean to you if the ISP not only knew it, was recording it, and then was selling it on to other people, marketers and the like? That's terrifying. It's completely legal, and it happens pretty much with every ISP all the time. And no, incognito mode and private browsing does nothing to hide where you're doing. What you need is a VPN. You need ExpressVPN. That's why when I'm online, I when I'm at home, I never went outside with, you know, sketch Wi-Fi access spot without ExpressVPN. But it's the same at home. Not just for security, but for privacy. ExpressVPN is the best. You know, we did a story yesterday on Security Now about a number of no logging. That was their advertisement anyway. No logging VPNs out of Hong Kong. Who got caught with their pants down, 1.2 terabytes of their customers' personal information left lying around on Elasticsearch server. Whoopsies, not even credentials. It was just on a public, whoopsies. First of all, there's two problems with that. One, that it happened. Second, that they do log. not ExpressVPN. And we know this for several reasons. Of course, they have independent third-party audits. ExpressVPN even went the extra mile. They created something they call Trusted Server. So when you take your phone or your laptop and you launch ExpressVPN, you push the big button that turns it on, you're spinning up an ExpressVPN Trusted Server at an ExpressVPN site. There's over 90 countries. So, you know, wherever it is in the world you want to be. It spins up and it runs out of RAM and it's sandboxed, so it can't write to the hard drive. No matter what, it can't record anything you've done. And then when you end your session, ExpressVPN spins down the trusted server. There is no trace that you were ever there. ExpressVPN does it right. They're fast, too, because they have so many servers in so many countries. You're going to get a very fast connection, even if you're using ExpressVPN, for instance, to go to a country to watch Netflix. So you have a Netflix U.S. account. You're logged in. You want to see some Doctor Who. You go on ExpressVPN. You say, put me in the London Docklands. You press the button. Now you're in London. You emerge onto the internet in London. You refresh Netflix. Suddenly says, cheerio, pip, pip, jolly good. Here's some Doctor Who. Nice. Now, most VPNs, you'd say, well, that was cool, but how am I going to watch it? With ExpressVPN, it's so fast. HD video is fantastic. It works great. And ExpressVPN can be used on almost any service. Netflix, Hulu, I've used it everywhere. Amazon Prime, everywhere. I think ExpressVPN is the best virtual private network you can get. Privacy, security, travel the world. It's available on all your devices, iPhone, iOS, Android, Mac, Windows. Frankly, most of the time I just leave it on. I don't even know it's running. It probably is running right now. I just leave it on. And you will too. Protect your online activity today with a VPN rated number one by CNET, number one by Wired, and the one I use. Visit our exclusive link, which is expressvpn.com/windows. They made it just for you, Paul and Mary Jo. Expressvpn.com/windows. You'll get 3 months free when you sign up for a year. It's the best. Expressvpn.com/windows. All right. The big stories of the week, Paul and Mary Jo. What are they?
Okay.
Mary Jo is switching to Apple.
What?
Yeah.
No, come on. Don't.
All about Apple.
No.
So I would like to talk first about what I believe is the new roadmap for Windows 10 going forward.
Yeah, I saw both of you wrote about this, and I thought this was very interesting. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So first, let me say this is all from sources. This is not officially designated or given to me by Microsoft. But what I hear is Microsoft's Windows engineering team needs to work on both Windows 10 feature updates and they need to work on Windows 10X, which is the thing that we've been calling Windows Lite or Santorini, you know, the more modular version of Windows 10 that has a completely different interface, and then which Microsoft said at the beginning was going to be a dual screen operating system device for the Surface Neo and other devices. Then they backtracked and said, actually, it's not going to be first for dual screen. It's going to be first for single screen. So they've had to go back to the drawing board and change their plan and get Windows 10X ready for single screens. So what I hear is the first iteration of Windows 10X will be out in the spring of 2021.
Not with Nuo or Neo or whatever it is.
Well, no, it won't be with the Neo because the Neo is a dual screen device and this will be for single screen.
So they're not going to do 10X on the Neo.
They will at some point, but not now.
When it ships. Oh, that's really interesting.
Right. So 10X, when it comes out, if it comes out in the spring of 2021, which is what I hear the goal is, it'll be out first on single screen devices. So that means clamshells and those kind, and maybe two in ones, right?
That means it's not ready, right? They had hoped it would be ready.
Yeah. It's not ready. No, right. It's not ready. And furthermore, when it first comes out, it will not come out with the Win32 support in a container as it was originally going to. It will just support UWP and MSIX apps. It will not support Win32 apps out of the game. Wow.
So let's stop there for 1 second because that's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So remember that as originally announced, this thing was in, the big deals with Windows 10X were the UX, the new UX, simpler UX,
right,
and this new container-based architecture. Right. And the Win32 container was a single container for all Win32 apps, desktop apps.
Yep.
It had two problems. Compatibility, big problem. They said they would improve that over time. And performance, right, which presumably they were planning on fixing over the course of the beta. I think that this delay, not having the Win32 container be part of the original shipping version of the system, and God knows, we'll see what happens after that, but says that those problems were insurmountable, at least in, this, yeah, in the short term.
I agree. I think it's a way of them saying, you know what, it wasn't quite ready. And I'm kind of glad they're delaying it, I have to say, because if it had come out with really poor Win32 compatibility and performance, it would have just wrecked the operating system. Like, people would be like, okay, that's another Windows, you know, Windows 10 and S mode or Windows XP, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, the way it's going to ship now is Windows 10 and S mode, right? It's store apps. Yeah. And web apps.
And MSIX. Right. Maybe MSIX package apps. Yep.
Package apps, also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Win32 is on the system. I mean, it's not like, you know, the underpinnings, right, of Windows don't disappear. But that was true, yep, of Windows 10 and S mode as well, right? So, yep, whatever came on, it obviously runs. And some of that will be Win32, I'd imagine. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, it's like you're not going to be able just to download anything you want from the web. And that's going to really limit the potential and the interest in this system from day one, for sure. I mean, it was a problem for 10S. It was a problem for Windows 10, you know.
So the reported target markets for it without Win32 apps are education and first-line workers / commercial, right? So, you know, Microsoft tried to make Windows 10S also target the education and first-line worker market. And I believe they sold some devices where that works for people, but it's not going to work for the bulk of people, right? So it's kind of them testing it out and getting it ready. Now, I hear they are going to add Win32 support to Windows 10X, but maybe not until a year later. So maybe not until 2022, which is that's when I think the next version of 10X will come. So you'll see the first version of Windows 10X, spring 2021. The second version of it, I think you will not see until the spring of 2022. And that's when it will be available on single screen and dual screen devices. So that kind of gives us a clue. Neo or whatever Microsoft comes out with as a dual screen Windows 10X device, probably not till spring 2022. And it'll likely by then have the Win32 container support.
So if you go back in time a couple of years ago, when we first started hearing about this thing, when it was like Lite OS or Windows 10 Lite, we saw it because what it looked like was Chrome OS. It looked like a Chrome OS system. And in many ways, this first version we're going to see has gone back to that vision of it. It's a single screen, you know, traditional desktop web browser. You're going to be able to run all those web apps, obviously, and the store apps, which is a fairly limited selection, but better than nothing, and a weak alternative to what Chrome OS has with Android.
Yeah, so I don't ever call Microsoft a liar publicly, but I'm going to call them a liar today because I believe Windows 10X was never intended to be a dual screen operating system. It always was intended to be their Chrome OS competitor. And when they announced it, they instead called it our operating system for dual screens, and I believe that was a lie.
No, I said that. I said that. We had 2 years of leaks. Dual screen was never part of it.
We knew this. There were other leaks after they announced 10X that showed they were building it for single screen. Like, we saw things from inside the company saying it's going to be on clamshell laptops. So, okay, Microsoft, I get it. You wanted to make it look like you built it for dual screens, but that. I strongly feel that was not your original intent and never was the
purpose. Oh, it wasn't. I will state that emphatically. They're lying.
Okay.
For, you know, Panos Panay to come out and say, you know, Windows is so virtual and versatile and our team can move so quickly. We quickly re-engineered it, you know, so it works on single screen systems. Yeah. No, that was always the intent.
Yeah.
So anyway, whatever.
Okay, so part two of the roadmap.
Yeah, so we'll see.
part two of the roadmap, which also is interesting if this is true. So this part I'm a little less certain of, but I think what's going to happen now is Microsoft's going to go to a single feature update per year for Windows 10, which, you know, they kind of already have it because a lot of enterprises only take the fall update anyway. But I think what they're going to do is stagger what they come out with. So spring releases will be for 10X and the fall releases will be the feature updates to plain old Windows 10. So if that's true, that means we will not see a 21H1 Windows 10 feature update.
Which is interesting because the thing that they're testing now in the dev channel, which used to be the fast ring.
Yep.
We have been saying this so far, the earliest version of Windows 10 that it could target is 21H1. But if this is true, then what we're really talking about is 21H2.
Right. So that maybe that's part of the reason Microsoft kept insisting the thing in the fast ring slash dev channel, it's not actually tied to a particular release. Maybe that's part of the reason they started saying that was because they knew, you know, it's not really going to be 21H1. It's going to be maybe 21H2, right?
Honestly, I mean, again, you know, since we're this is going to fly down speculation alley here. If you think about how 2004 has gone poorly.
Yeah.
This thing had been in development for whatever it was, 15 or 18 months before they finally finalized, I guess 15 months before they finally said, okay, it's ready. We're going to start shipping it to customers. All kinds of problems, you know. They could conclude the development of what we thought of as 21H1 on the normal schedule, but just not ship it until the second half of the year. And they'll do it, you know, like they did with 2004, where we had from December till May, they could have a similar, actually a longer period of time where they ship cumulative updates for quality and bug fixes and security fixes. And then when it's finally ready, ship it to customers. You know, we'll see.
I'm not against this. Once a year is perfect, right? Once a year for a feature update, that's a good idea. I think that's better than doing it the way they're doing, which is first half consumers and some forward-looking businesses start playing around with it once they get it. I mean, like I still don't have it on my Surface Laptop 3, just saying. And then
it doesn't work. The system doesn't work.
It hasn't worked out. And it's this is kind of a graceful way for them to say, you know what, we're just going to do one feature update because we only have so many engineers and we need to prioritize both Windows 10X and Windows 10.
The only feature update that ever worked, really worked, was 1909. And 1909 was not a feature update. It was just a cumulative update masquerading as a feature update. And that kind of proves that the once a year system makes more sense. Because really, that was a once-a-year system. We're doing it again this year where they really release one feature update, and then they update it, and then they call some future cumulative update a feature update, even though it really isn't. And you can see the difference when you install it. You install it, you reboot, it goes bloop, 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 and comes right back up. It's nothing.
But for that to happen, you have to be on the spring update, right? So
that's true. Yep.
So that's the trick now. So if they do one update a year, is it going to look like a cumulative update? No.
Oh, no, right? No. No.
It's going to be bigger, right?
No, it would be a feature update. Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. That's okay. Once a year is fine.
I know. I think it's reasonable to ask people to do that once a year. I would like to hear this sooner rather than later, especially because if Windows 10X first iteration is coming out in the spring, it means... I mean, to me, it means the dev channel's testing things that may show up in Windows 10X. You're already testing it right now.
So we fall into this trap a little too easily, but unfortunately, what we do.
It's a trap.
You look at the schedule and you say, well, when might they say something about this?
I know.
And when they, and of course, the time would be the next show, which is Inspire, which is still in September.
You mean Ignite? Yeah.
Ignite. I'm sorry. What did I say? Ignite. Sorry.
Yeah. That would be good timing for that.
Yeah, it works. It makes sense schedule-wise. But I feel like we've done this a lot. You say, well, you know, build's coming up. Wait till build. They'll say something. And then they say some nonsense that, you know, doesn't really clarify anything. I mean, hopefully that is what they do. Their track record has not been great. And I guess us believing that this could happen every time is probably foolish. But
either that if they have a separate announcement for the Surface Duo, Windows Central thinks they might come out with that before September. Mm-hmm. They could use that event to talk about this new schedule.
Okay.
They could.
Okay. All right. But that's that's one of two, right?
Yeah.
What we just described is only one of the two stories. And I think the second one is possibly, it's definitely as big. It might be bigger. But I think the two collectively are fairly dramatic.
Yeah. So Leo, remember how we've been talking about thin clients on every show recently?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I kept saying, you know what? That sounds really good. But like, when is that ever going to happen?
Yeah.
You know when it's going to happen?
When?
Spring 2021.
Really? They announced thin clients?
No, they didn't announce it. I helped them announce it. Okay. So I got a tip late last week on something called Cloud PC, which I didn't know what it was. And so I went to the Microsoft job site and I just plugged it in for fun. And I'm like, you know what? That's not going to show up. Well, boom. Cloud PC. Cloud PC is a new offering we are building on top of Windows Virtual Desktop to deliver desktop as a service. This is Microsoft's thin client service, which I hear from my contacts, spring 2021 is the target for the first iteration of this.
Wow.
This should be an Ignite announcement.
Yeah, interesting timing given that Windows 10X, which we might also view as a thin client of sorts, is also set to debut at that exact time.
Exactly. Right? So what I hear about Cloud PC is Microsoft will charge a flat fee for it, a flat monthly fee, and that any Windows PC will be able to be a client for this. And I don't know if it also means phones like iOS and Android and Mac and Linux even will be thin clients, but I know Windows PCs will. So if you have an existing Windows PC, you don't even have to have a new one like a 10X PC, you'll be able to subscribe to the Cloud PC service and it will deliver to your desktop as a desktop as a service kind of experience, Windows, Office, your security updates, and other types of applications. I'm not sure what else will show up there, but all virtualized to your desktop.
Can I do it on a Mac? Because that would be really
amazing.
We have to, again, speculation alley, right? So obviously for this thing to make sense, it has to work on other clients as well,
right?
It should work over the web. It should work on Linux. It should work on the Mac. It should work on mobile. That's where it really makes sense. Now on Windows, you would gain, again, without actually knowing how this works, right? And with the understanding that there have been just a laundry list of solutions like this over the years, from everything from the actual thin clients that Microsoft has worked on, Windows-based thin clients, to remote desktop solutions like we have Windows Virtual Desktop today. Back in the day, these things were delivered out of corporate data centers. Today, they would be delivered typically over Azure from the cloud. But we don't know. We don't know. I mean, we just know what we know. But I would assume if you have a Windows PC that you would gain additional capabilities, the ability to install something that looks like an app, that is an app to you, that's not a full desktop. Whereas if you're on an iPad, would you have that capability?
Or maybe you have a client that's a window, browser is. Maybe a browser.
Well, that's the thing.
HTML5 browser could do it.
Yep, that's right.
So the reason I think it will support other clients is if you look at what are the underpinnings of this service, it's Windows Virtual Desktop. Windows Virtual Desktop works on the Mac, and it works on iOS, and it works on Android, right? So that makes me think it's going to work on those platforms.
Also, interestingly, the initial shipping version of Windows 10X will not support Win32 apps. Well,
correct.
This is how you get them onto that system, right?
Right.
And over time, assuming they bring this thing back, which I sort of feel like they will. I referred to the possibility that Windows 10X could be viewed as like the next NT, because if this container-based system worked, then it should become what we think of as Windows, because this system is safer and more secure. It's more reliable, but you have the compatibility and performance issues. You got to kind of get over that hump. But if those things work, this is how Microsoft can separate itself from the legacy Win32 past. That's one way. But, you know, this is the other way, right? I mean, we just talked about this. We talked about thin clients and 5G coming and the ability to deliver apps from the cloud. Well, maybe that's another way to get – I mean, well, no, it literally is another way. I think these things are two paths to the same destination is actually sort of an article I wrote. But,
also, no one should freak out about this, right?
By the way, everyone should freak out. It's all changing.
No. So remember when we used to hear all these rumors about Microsoft, I mean, Windows 365, and people were like, oh, my God, Microsoft's going to make Windows a paid service. I don't want this. I want Windows on my desktop. I don't want to buy this. It's going to be an option. It's not going to be the only way you can get Windows.
That's the sanest thing anyone's ever said. So as enthusiasts, we tend to get up in an uproar. You know, you'll get you this full-featured Windows out of my dead cold hands, et cetera, et cetera. The big difference between the way Microsoft does things and the way Apple does things, and we sort of view this as a negative. Remember about a month ago when Apple had their big announcement. You know, Microsoft does Windows 10 on ARM as a side project. Microsoft does Windows 10S as a side project. Microsoft will do Windows 10X as a side project. These, to Microsoft, these are all options. You know, that the people who need or want the full-featured Windows 10 desktop client, because they're gamers, because they're programmers, because they're architects or engineers or scientists or whatever they are. That will, that, of course, that will always be. They'll never say goodbye to anything. But, you know, the hope is for Microsoft over time that more and more people can use these thin clients slash whatever they are, you know, future clients with this cloud service maybe, and that we kind of start stepping back from this legacy code. And they can have a more modern platform. But they're not going to just flip a switch, you know. That will never happen. I would say, because I was a little negative about this with the Apple announcement, this is the positive side of that coin. That because as excited, look, you could dread this or you could be excited for it. But the thing you need to understand is it's not going to just happen overnight, and it's not going to destroy what we're already doing today. It does not go away.
Look at Office for an example. Microsoft is still releasing Office 2019 as a separate standalone version that doesn't require a subscription. And the reason they're doing that is there are people who still want to buy that. And just the same way, there will still be people who want Windows preloaded on their machines, and they don't want to have to think about, do I need to like license Windows so that it's streaming or Office? Like, can I get this as a bundle? Like, people want to have options. And
but things change.
To your point, to your point though, Microsoft is good at giving people lots of options, and someday this will be the only option.
Yes.
But so many years from now, think about
the way music services have evolved. If you had an iPod, almost 15 years ago, you know, you would have used software on your PC or Mac to download song or have your own songs burn CDs, and you had your own music and you could copy it over to the device. You know, today most people just pay $10 a month and they use a service like Apple Music or Spotify or whatever, and that's fine for most people. Someone like me, who's kind of old school, I do have a bunch of music that I ripped millions of years ago, and some of it still isn't in the services. I need a service that has both. I'd like the streaming part of it for sure, but I also like to have my own stuff. And those are starting to fall off, right? I mean, Amazon used to do it. It's gone. Apple still offers it, and Google still offers it. But Google's switching over to YouTube Music too, and that's about to change. I mean, we'll see what happens. But there'll be a transition period. And this, I think, is very common for technology. We could probably make a bunch of other examples, but it's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, if you're loving your copy of Windows 8 or something, or Windows 10 and Office 2013 or 2016 or whatever it is you're still using, because you're just never going to give that up. God love you. And whatever, you can keep using that. Plus the support timelines on those or whatever they are. I mean, they'll be around for a while. In some cases. But eventually, someday in the future, we're not going to recognize this stuff. We joke today about, remember we used to go to a store, we'd buy a box and had something shaking inside of it, and it was either like a floppy disk or a CD-ROM or something. We'd bring it home and plug it in, and, you know, like that's antiquated, you know, today. I mean, eventually it's just, this is how, you know, how things evolve. I think these two things, it is coincidental that you found both of these things in 1 week, you know?
I don't think it was coincidental.
But it is certainly good, because they are definitely tied together. Like, they're definitely connected.
I think they are too. Me too. Especially, you know, the Windows Virtual Desktop team, they're not part of Windows per se. I mean, it's an Azure hosted service, but if you look at it, Windows Engineering sits in Azure now. So, you know, it's all one big happy or unhappy family.
Here's one thing to think about, by the way. Surface Duo could come out before September this summer sometime.
Yep.
Based on Android, right?
Right.
It's a dual screen device, which is a little weird.
Yep.
Microsoft could deploy virtual desktop or virtual applications to that device.
Yep.
And I think we talked about this last week, but there is the possibility that Duo could be the first of a coming wave of Android devices that have different form factors from Microsoft. Mm-hmm. That would be a way to get legacy software on one of those as well.
Yeah.
Right. So if you had like a Surface
Somebody
Pro.
Somebody asked me that.
Yeah. Running Android. Why not?
Right.
You know?
A guy said to me, so if I buy the Surface Duo, could I use this cloud PC service to put Windows apps on my Duo? I'm like, I'm not going to say no. Maybe next year, you know.
Well, because, you know, I think at the time, Microsoft was talking about this notion of developers could create dual screen apps that maybe could run on both platforms, even though it wouldn't be one app, obviously. Different user experiences that would make sense between Duo and Neo. But I mean, if they're going to do something like this to deliver Win32 apps, I mean, these things could work similarly and could run the same apps remotely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
I'm just glad you all have come around to my way of thinking.
Well, you know, Leo, after enough time. You know.
The craziest thing is how much we talked about thin clients on Windows Weekly the past 2 weeks. And then this comes out and I'm like, so are they listening to Windows Weekly? And they're like, here, take this. Here's, you guys are talking about this. Take this tip.
No. But I bet Chris Capicella has been giggling as we've been talking about
it. I bet he is too. Right. Yeah. I know. He's like, oh, they're so close. They're circling it, but they can't get there. Right. Yep.
I feel it. But Microsoft's been circling this for a long time too. Right.
I
talked about some of the virtualization technologies that they had 20 years ago, like MedV and AppV, and they had terminal services and, you know, Windows fundamentals for legacy PCs. Remember that thing? Windows Thin PC. You know, there's been these little jabs here and there. Not here and there. I mean, for over 20 years. They've been looking at it, too. I mean...
Speaking of Scott McNeely, the network is the computer. Yeah. There we go, right?
Yeah. So there is nothing worse than being too early with a good idea, you know?
Ask Microsoft. The network, they are early.
Yeah,
too
the network
many-
is the computer made zero sense when we all had dial-up networking in the 1990s, you know? And it's even today, there'll be people who tell you, well, you don't understand. I live in a rural area and I don't, you know, like, yeah, I get it. Or I had people complaining about this, you know, they were saying like this cloud PC thing would never fly because what happens if your internet goes out? I don't know what happens when your Gmail goes out today. I guess you just don't get Gmail for a little while. It's like, you know, we can't account for every possibility, right. But.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I mean, this is where they've been headed. I mean, this isn't a surprise, really.
It's not a surprise. Yeah. It's just a surprise that it's a surprise to me how quickly it may show up. Now that we know about it, I'm like, wait, this isn't like 5 years from now. This is like next year.
Yep. Now, let's move on to circle round. Mm-hmm. Back to Teams. Yes?
Yeah, yes. Sort of. So this week.
You don't sound so excited.
Microsoft is having a conference this week. Now, this is their partner conference. It's called Inspire now. Back in the day, we used to get to go to it.
Yes.
And so, I don't know, I think it's been 3 years now. The press has not been invited. So they were in D.C. for a while. They were, in Las Vegas a couple of years. Now,
Orlando.
Obviously, they're doing a virtual thing. Orlando. Yeah. I don't remember. But it doesn't matter. I didn't go. So, but now we're invited again. So they're letting the press participate because it's virtual there. They provided a book of news, which anyone can see now. And I would say from my perspective as kind of a client-centric person, there wasn't a lot of news. There was some team stuff. And then maybe from your perspective, Mary Jo, I guess, because you cover enterprise.
Yeah,
there was more stuff. Yeah.
But not a lot. I agree. Like some years, Inspire has so much product news. It's like as big as Build and Ignite in terms of products. This year, not as much.
Yep. Which is fine, by the way, because remember, Inspire is located Ignite, right between Build and Ignite. Did I say Ignite again?
Ignite
I'm sorry.
2 months away. 2 months away for
Ignite. Ignite is very right. It's closer. It's actually sooner than it usually is. So by 2 months. Yeah. So Build had an unbelievable amount of news. Sure Ignite will as well. So that's fine. We're not. I just want to be clear. We're not complaining about that.
No. But Teams news wise, what did you think was big out of the? They had a ton of Teams announcements.
The biggest thing to me was the Power Apps integration and the new. I think you understand this better than I do. This they're kind of, I don't know if they're rebranding it or their use of the term data flex.
Yeah. That was kind of a surprise.
Is it like a licensing error or something? I don't quite understand what that means.
Yeah. So I agree with you. The Power Platform integration with Teams and also with Dynamics 365 was a big piece of news. So because Microsoft's Microsoft, this year has been nonstop rebranding by Microsoft, right? Of everything and anything. So what they're doing is they're rebranding the thing that used to be called Common Data Service, which will be familiar to Power Platform users and to Dynamics users.
Right.
Yeah. Calling it DataFlex, right? Yeah. So DataFlex, because that would be too simple to just say it that way, there are two DataFlexes. There's plain old baby DataFlex, which is what gets integrated into Teams. And then there's DataFlex Pro, which is for people who are using Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform all up. Why this matters, in short, is if you want to build low-code, no-code apps directly inside Teams, you're going to use DataFlex as part of that.
Which means people have to pay.
You know, we talked about Teams being everything. So now Teams also is a development platform for apps for Teams.
Yep.
For Teams using Power Platform. One more thing that Teams can do. Yep. Yeah, so DataFlex, lowercase f for people who obsess over, is it capital F or lowercase? All one word, DataFlex with a lowercase f.
Ironically, it's also an acronym. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Ironically, it's also a trademark that belongs to another company.
Uh-oh.
So we'll see how that goes too.
Uh-oh.
But yeah.
Whoopsies.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other one, is the subscription services for Teams meeting rooms. Did you see that news?
Yeah.
So another rebranding. The thing that was
levels, right?
Yeah. So Microsoft Managed Meeting Rooms, which they announced at Ignite, which is Microsoft actually manages your conference room for you so that they take care of your video conferencing device and all the equipment that's in your conference room. And if something goes wrong with it,
if someone is talking to the kid, do they tell them to shush too? Is it like
we're listening to your conference. No, they actually do the 24/7 management and monitoring of your physical meeting room at your company, and they will send people on site to fix stuff if it breaks. So that's expensive. That's $50 per device per month. And then there's this thing called Teams Room Standard that used to be called Meeting Room. It's $15 per user per month. And this is more about just managing the fleet of devices that you use when you're doing conferencing. And they are making it able to see all your devices that are handling your Teams conferencing in the Teams Admin Center.
So I glossed over this part of the book of news when it happened, or the separate email we got about it. But now I'm beginning to realize that the point of this is we got to bring this back home, because this is a partner show. And one of the problems for Microsoft over time is that they've started taking stuff away from partners and bringing it in-house. That's one of the problems that people have with Office 365. Like, it's Microsoft managing your email in the cloud. That's something partners used to do.
Yeah.
So what you're describing in many ways is just something that partners can do as well. Like, they could, it would be actually Microsoft partners that would show up physically at your place of work to repair or troubleshoot stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or is it literally Microsoft employees?
I believe so. I believe it'll be Microsoft and selected partners. And they made a big deal out of saying, we're not cutting partners out of either of these two subscription services. Like, we're going to try to have them sell it for us and sell it with us and add value on top of both of these services.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although I think the partner story gets a little watered down
diluted.
As the years go by,
it does.
Unfortunately, right?
It does.
Yep.
Yeah, but those I thought were pretty interesting Teams announcements. And then lists on Microsoft 365.
I'm hoping to write about that the next week, actually. But I still don't see it on my Microsoft 365. I should look at that.
Yeah, so Microsoft has this thing called Lists. It's an application for Microsoft 365 users coming for people who subscribe in late July, and it will be available inside Teams too in mid-August. So Lists is something that does things like lets you create, share, and track data and information. It's not the same as To Do. It's not the same as Planner. It's not the same as Tasks and Outlook. It's yet another way you can keep track of things that you need to do through a list.
Yeah, I still don't have it. A lot of Microsoft stuff rolls out over time, and they did describe this that way. So,
I don't know
what the deal is. I'm on early access in there. I don't know. I don't have it. Yeah. So.
Well, and then Universal Print, we should mention too, right? Did you see that? So Microsoft has a cloud printing service that they call Universal Print. It was introduced in private preview in March, and now it is available in public preview. So if you're somebody who doesn't want to install printer drivers because they'll be directly built into Windows 10 and don't want to mess with printing locally, it's like a cloud print service, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Google had this and they killed it, right? Didn't Google have a cloud print?
I was literally just going to say, I know Google has this. So you're saying they killed it.
Okay. But Microsoft has it now, I guess. So yeah. And that is an opportunity for partners. So they have a lot of printer company partners and companies who deal with printing services. So they're going to all be jazzed about Universal Print. I predict. Yeah. Then there were some more first line features for Teams, walkie-talkie feature where you can use your device like a walkie-talkie. That's now in public preview.
A lot of the announcements were for things that had already been announced.
There was
a whole Edge announcement that was, you kind of go through and you're like, okay, we already knew about every one of these, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So I feel like some of the Teams stuff was a little bit like this because they had been, kind of disclosing some of the stuff that we're going to do.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm just trying to connect it. I'm still trying to get into my Microsoft 365 account.
Talk about the UX thing, though, because I didn't even write about this because, me and looking at changes.
Oh, by the way, this time your mind would have been blown. So Microsoft, one of the problems I have with Microsoft is they communicate things from different places, and you never know where something's going to be. So they have corporate blogs, right?
Yeah,
they have team blogs, like blogs.windows.com is, and if you go there, there's blogs for like Windows, for a developer, for whatever. There are like tech community forums where they often just post things. And then for some reason, some teams actually have Medium blogs, like on the Medium service. And this team that does the Fluent Design stuff, that's where they blog. So there was a blog tied to Inspire where they talked about how they were going to advance the state of the user experience across Microsoft 365 apps across different device types, right? And you're like, okay. And I have a hard time with this level of nonsense because they literally don't – there's a video – that's all those animated nonsense things and 3D apps coming into focus that look nothing like actual apps. This is what the guy wrote. He said they've been on a multi-year design journey to create more focused, immersive experiences from the single line ribbon to dark mode to Fluent. So I'm just going to stop it right there because that is everything that says is nonsense. All three of those things are not out in the world. Single line ribbon is on some web apps, it's on Outlook for Windows, and it's in OneNote because it was in OneNote for Windows 10 from day one. Yeah. Like that's where it started, I think.
Yeah.
It is not in any other Microsoft 365 app. It is just not there. Dark mode is on some of the mobile stuff, but as far as Windows 10 is concerned, is the most horrible, inconsistent dark mode you'll ever see on any platform. It's ridiculous. And
it's
then Fluent,
gray mode,
are you,
isn't it?
It's cream, it's black mode. I mean, it's terrible. And then Fluent, are you kidding me? Fluent is like typical Microsoft. We'll throw a little here, we'll throw a little here, throw a little here. And then like 2 years goes by and you kind of stop hearing about it because they just stopped doing it. But now they're using this as their background of all the success we had. And now we're moving on to the next wave. And this is literally, there are two things that he says, this person, and I don't want to rip on them, but will be in the next wave of UX changes.
Yep.
They're going to fade brand colors from the app headers
What does that mean? I saw those words and I was like,
so,
I don't know.
If you bring up Microsoft Word today on Windows or on mobile, the top header part is blue. It's the that's the branding. Yeah.
Right.
They're going to fade that color, Mary Jo. They're going to fade it.
Fade it? Do you mean like a gradual fade or do you mean like it's going to be white or transparent?
See, I wish I could answer that question, but that's literally all he said about it.
Just wondering. So, okay.
So there's going to be that.
Okay.
And then the other one is they're going to explore, not implement, but explore adaptive commanding, a flexible ribbon that progressively discloses contextually relevant commands at the right time, just when you need them. So if you think back to the original ribbon and the way that the big ribbon, the classic ribbon works in Office applications today, you can have additional ribbons pop up, additional tabs based on what you're doing. So if you select an image, for example, in Word, there's, I don't remember what it's called, but like a picture tab will appear and you get additional ribbons. I think what they're saying is one of the problems with the single line ribbon, the thing they were so proud of before, because and I think the reason it hasn't been rolled out broadly, is in complex apps like Excel, especially, right? Yeah. Word, PowerPoint, you actually don't, you can't fit enough commands in there because it's a single line, it's just not enough space. That was the reason they went to the ribbon in the first place. So I think what they're saying is they're trying to figure out a way to be more contextual so that that ribbon adapts dynamically based on what it is you're doing at the time. We all know Microsoft has a rich history of Clippy and whatnot, of adapting contextually. I'm sure this one's going to work great. But here's the problem. He goes on and blah, 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 but not whatever. The whole thing's nonsense. But there's a video, and I challenge everyone to watch this video and try to find examples of this new UI anywhere in it. I so do not I believe they exist.
When I saw that second feature, it reminded me, they have this thing called Tell Me What You Want to Do in the ribbon, right? So that to me is as good as being contextual because you just type in that box, I want to, you know, figure out how to change a cell in a spreadsheet and it shows you how to do it, right? Like it brings you to where you need to be.
Yeah. So in other words, so it's funny because Amazon just announced a developer feature for Alexa today. It's a little bit like this. The notion is inside of, we'll just use Word as an example. Inside of Word, there is a feature and that feature has a name. And if you don't know the name, obviously you have to be able to type a like a plain English sentence and say, I want to blah, 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 whatever it is.
Right.
And it has to use AI or pattern matching or whatever to match what you type to the actual name of the command so that it can bring up the right help, right?
Yeah, right.
That's what that is. And so, and Amazon's trying to do that for Alexa, so you can talk to it, and, you know, instead of saying the exact name of a skill, you can say blah, 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 whatever, and it just does it.
Yeah,
this totally makes sense. This is how modern software works. It's fine.
Yep.
But I just,
I know.
Guys, here's an idea. Show us what you're thinking, right? I don't like the idea of a multi-year design journey. You invent a design and implement it and then evolve.
I don't like the word journey. I'm just going to throw that out there. I make fun of it, like digital transformation and journey.
Yeah.
Whenever I use journey, it's used ironically.
The customer journey.
Yes.
I think we need to imagine the listener journey, Mary Jo, and maybe.
We do.
Decontextualize. What I'm talking about. I can't speak. I can't. As hard as I try, I can't. See, this is why I would never succeed in marketing. I can't speak like this. Anyway, have fun with that video, folks. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
Don't use up all your energy. You got a big night tonight.
Oh, yeah, we do. We have a big night ahead. Q4 20 earnings coming up after the bell.
Ding, 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 ding.
That could be any time, right? That's coming soon.
In the next half hour.
It could be
any time. Yeah.
Yep.
Usually they do something at 1 p.m. Pacific, and then like the call is at 1:30.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, it'll be a big year for commercial cloud. You can predict that already.
Right? Yep.
It's the year of the
We should point out, in case it's not clear, Microsoft's fiscal year ended on June 30. So this is literally going to be the last quarter and the entire year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're going to talk about layoffs during this because the layoffs happened in the start of the new fiscal year. But I just wanted to point out, we thought as of last week, there were about 1,000 people who got laid off in the rounds. But we found out just yesterday, LinkedIn is laying off another 1,000 people on top of the 1,000. So Microsoft's laid off about 2,000 people so far in their new fiscal year. Just throwing that out there. I don't think that'll come up on the call. I think they'll talk a lot about work from home and how that's helped them build teams. Maybe we'll get a new Teams number just to like spite Slack a little more today. You know, the 75 million right. is now 100 million Slack. Yeah. And then we'll probably hear a lot about, you know, just how the cloud has been buoyed by work from home and everybody's going Office 365, Microsoft 365. I don't know what they'll say on Xbox at this point. On the call, but
they're going to be in a holding pattern with Xbox, right? That's just where they are in the year, you know.
So coming up later tonight.
Okay.
Let's do our Xbox news and get it out of the way. You're going to be talking about Xbox tomorrow. You have plenty of time to talk about Xbox.
I mean, watch out your mouth. You're fine. So some interesting developments this week. Microsoft quietly stopped selling 12-month Xbox Live Gold subscriptions. It still sells 1- and 3-month versions. The reason you would buy it in 12-month increments is because it's cheaper to do that, right? And then they confirmed that they were doing this, but they didn't say why. So, of course, everyone's like, But tied to this, Microsoft also announced its kind of grand vision for the next generation of gaming and so forth. And obviously, they've got new consoles coming and everything. But they said that Project X Cloud, starting in, I think, August or maybe September, but August or September, is going to be rolled into Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So there were if you think about Microsoft's Xbox subscriptions, Xbox Gold Xbox Live Gold was the cheapest, $60 a year. Basically, that just gave you multiplayer gaming rights. You could get Xbox Game Pass for console, for Xbox One, or for PC. Those are $9.99 a month. And they don't come with Xbox Live Gold. So if you wanted to, like, you subscribe to Game Pass on console, you download a game, you want to play it online and play multiplayer, you still have to get Xbox Live Gold. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate gives you both console and PC together, so you can do both, and Xbox Live Gold. And now it's also going to give you xCloud. And this is $15 a month. And so I think the speculation here is maybe they're just going to get rid of Xbox Live Gold, and Xbox Game Pass will be the subscription family because there are three versions of it going forward. But again, you know, we're in, like I said earlier, it's kind of a transition period right now. And a big part of that transition is they've stopped manufacturing most Xbox One consoles. So there were three versions they were making. There's the Xbox One X, which is the 4K version, Xbox One S, which is probably the best seller, and then the Xbox One S All Digital Edition, which is Xbox One S minus the Blu-ray drive. So the X and the All Digital Edition no longer being made. If you can find them, obviously you can still buy them while, you know, supplies last. They're going to keep selling Xbox One S for the foreseeable future. I expect they will either announce an Xbox Series S, and that will be the end of that, or maybe they'll ride through the holiday with Xbox One Series X and Xbox One S, and then maybe next year they go to Series S. We'll see, but... right now, if you want to buy an Xbox One S, the only one they're still making, right, manufacturing, is the S, which is not capable of 4K gaming.
Okay.
So Xbox sad goes away. Is that what we're saying?
Sad.
S all digital sad.
Mary Jo, Mary Jo.
Isn't that the acronym? No.
Mary Jo.
No.
Sad. Nice try.
All right.
Hey, you know what? Appreciate you listening to what I said.
At least she did that. Yep. She didn't snooze her way or fall apart.
I was awake, sort of.
Go get the cat or.
Could
All right. Let's do our back of the book, starting with Paul's tip of the week.
Alluded to this, but tomorrow is the big reveal for Xbox One Series X. Sorry, Xbox Series X. Right. So Sony had its game title announcement, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever that was. So Microsoft's doing theirs tomorrow, and Leo and I will be MSTing it. Basically, I guess we'll be talking over it. But
yes,
tomorrow. So this occurs at what time? Noon ET, which is 9 a.m. PT. They're streaming it live. I don't know that – it's possible parts of it will be a live event, but I suspect given the nature of it, it's probably going to be pre-recorded. But this will be our first in-depth look at what Xbox Series X games will look like. The big one, of course, is going to be Halo Infinite. But there should be a lot of Microsoft Studio game or Xbox Studio games, as well as third-party games. And we have the Sony event to kind of compare it to. I was not blown away by that, by the way. I mean, the quality of the games graphically was incredible. I thought the mix of games was a little weird. There were a lot of Nintendo-type games, kiddie games. I thought that was kind of strange. So we'll see what direction Microsoft goes in. But that's happening tomorrow. So if you're listening live, it's tomorrow. If you're not, it's Thursday.
How long is that going to be? It's going to be an hour, right? They're not going to belabor it. Yeah.
It gets tedious after a while. We're going to be checking our messages by minute 43, I can tell you that. Yeah. But yeah,
there is a drumbeat going for both the Xbox Series X and the PS5 as if they might emerge sometime soon. Do we know?
It's likely that they'll not come out till November, but I think because of, they can't do a big in-person E3 type thing, right? So, and of course, Sony actually pulled out of E3 a year or two ago anyway. Sony probably would have had their own event. And so what I think what both companies have decided is instead of doing like one big bang thing and letting a lot of time go by, they don't want to get out of the minds of fans, and they're doing little drops, here and there. And usually they take the form of some kind of, Microsoft does these elaborate blog posts about technical details and so forth. But for people who care about the games, this event tomorrow will be essentially what the E3 would have been, where they just talk games. So this is the big one.
Speaking of the big one, we're starting to get numbers.
Yep.
So get us the app pick of the week, and then we'll throw it to our correspondent on the trading floor.
So Microsoft released Edge 84 this week. It's not really a big deal from like a new features perspective, but for me, I had some major performance issues, and I think they are tied to this thing. Remember, Microsoft was going to reduce the memory footprint, and they were going to put that stuff back into Chrome, and Google agreed to do it. I think it caused major performance problems. They stripped all that stuff out. It's not in Chrome anymore. It's not in Edge. And for me, it seriously fixed some major issues. If you are not using Edge, I don't even want to talk to you at this point. You need to be using Edge. You need to at least evaluate it. If you're a Windows user not using Edge, you're not paying attention. Google is literally siphoning your personal data every single day in Chrome. You just use Edge. It's the same thing without the Google center.
It's the same thing. De-Googleized.
Just do it.
Do it. All right, Mary Jo, what's going on here?
All right. They're having a killer quarter and a killer year. Yep. I'll just throw that out.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Shocking. Shocking. Yeah.
Revenue
for the quarter, $38 billion. Operating income, $13.4 billion, up 8%.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Surface revenue.
All Xbox.
Surface revenue up 28%.
Yep.
Xbox and services.
I know.
65% increase. OEM revenue, 7%. What?
Insane. All right. Let's get through the rest of the picks here.
Okay. Boom. All right. Enterprise pick of the week.
Wow. Okay. This is a pick from the partner show. Azure Stack HCI version 2. What does that mean? Azure Stack Hyper-Converged Infrastructure version 2. Azure Stack HCI is for people who want to take advantage of Azure services, but they really don't want to put Azure inside their own data center or use the public cloud. So they can use Windows Server, basically, or this new Azure Stack HCI operating system in their own data center, even on their own hardware as a version 2, and they can access Azure services. So this is out in public preview right now, and I see a lot of people saying they want to kick the tires and see how well this really works. If you're somebody who cares about Azure Arc, which is Microsoft's way of managing all your cloud assets from a single pane of glass inside your own data center, you also will be interested in this because you can see your Azure Stack HCI V2 natively using Azure Arc. Stretch clusters for high availability and disaster recovery are there. Woo! New deployment wizard and all kinds of other excellent features. So I think if you are somebody who's like, yeah, I want to try the cloud, but I'm a little afraid, go check out Azure Stack HCI V2.
Yeah.
Wow.
And not to be left out, the code name of the week.
We got two code names.
Ooh.
And they're both from the vault, code names from the past, but they kind of are relevant given we were talking about thin clients today and Windows 10X. So Albacore on Twitter, who goes by The Book Is Closed, I think he works for Microsoft. He reminded us this week there were two code names for previous products that both were branded Windows 10S. Windows 10S at one point was codenamed Windows Cloud. Even though it had absolutely nothing to do with the cloud. And then there was also a product called Windows Cloud E, which ultimately Microsoft also said was Windows 10S, but it actually was something called Windows 10 Lean, which was supposed to be a very stripped down version of Windows 10, almost like a thin client. And that never really materialized in that form. Instead, Microsoft just said, yeah, oh yeah, that was Windows 10S. But it makes you wonder if Windows 10 Lean is still floating around and if it has any relationship to Windows 10X.
It does.
It may. Who knows, right?
Anything's possible. Yep.
Anything is possible anymore. I mean, now that we're getting thin client computing next year, I think everything and anything is possible.
And now, the beer of the week.
Yes, the beer of the week is another pick in honor of Stuart Butterfield. this pick is called Crybaby.
You're a crybaby.
It is from a brewery in Haarlem in the Netherlands, Ooh. Which I cannot pronounce. U-I-L-T-J-E. Any guesses, guys, on how to pronounce that one?
Wilch.
No, you got to get a Dutch Wilch. Person in here.
Wilch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chardet.
Anyway, I don't know how to pronounce it, but they make a beer called Crybaby. It's a fruited Berliner Weiss beer that sounds very delicious. They describe it as casually tart. Mm. And the reason they call it Crybaby is the only person we are calling a crybaby is the buster who sips our beautiful little Berliner Weiss and says it's sour. Yeah, I was just looking for a pick for Stuart because, you know, he deserves a little toast this week. And then when I found Crybaby, it was just too perfect.
You're a crybaby. You're a crybaby. That's hysterical.
It sounds like a good beer. I would drink that beer. It sounds pretty good. A nice light summer Berliner Weiss that's lightly sour, not too sour.
Karsten says it's Wilcha.
Wilcha. Wow.
Wilcha.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't even attempt that then.
Yeah. But that's Karsten. He might be completely making it up. We just don't know.
Okay. Well, then.
He's not Dutch as far as I know.
You know, Karsten could be anything.
He could be anything. Probably is.
Anything he wants to be.
Probably is anything. My friends, we have come to the end of this gripping, thrilling edition of Windows Weekly, and you are going to run off right now, I know, to get the annual results, which look pretty darn good for the old Microsoft. 14% up, revenue up for the
COVID
year.
COVID is the best thing that ever happened to Microsoft.
Some companies, you know, really isn't such a bad thing, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean,
some companies. Yeah. Karsten is a Dutch name. Kirsten. And he says, yes, he made it up. Oh, God. Oh. Oh, we do Windows Weekly every Wednesday. You got me again. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1800 UTC. You want to tune in and watch the production go live. That's at twit.tv/live. There's audio and video. Chat rooms, irc.twit.tv. You can join them while you're watching live because they're watching live too. After the fact, we put everything up on the website on demand. It's twit.tv/ww. Or the Windows Weekly channel on YouTube, or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. You'll get it each week the minute it's ready. Paul Thurrott's at Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And we are out of here. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Sorry.
Go get the numbers.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android, where each week I'm joined by my co-hosts Florence Ion and Ron Richards, and we talk about everything that has to do with Android. Is it news? Is it hardware? Is it apps? Well, you name it, we talk about it. We invite guests from the industry on the show. We even sometimes have people from the Android team themselves talking about what makes Android so great. And you can subscribe so you don't miss anything about the world of Android by going to twit.tv/AAA. We'll see you there.